Hello, and welcome to Nothing Ever Happens in Canada. But we know this is simply not true. This is a Canadian podcast about the myths, legends, and just good old stories Canada has to tell. I'm Canadian Girl. Thanks so much for joining me today on this fun little bonus adventure I thought you all might enjoy. Since this is a bonus tale today, I'm going to shove all that business stuff that we normally go over right here all the way down to the end of the show. So if you are looking for that business stuff, I'll meet you at the end of the show so we can go over it there. Now let's hop right into this fun little bonus adventure that I came across while I was doing my research for the Superheroes of Canada comic book adventure we just went on in our last episode here on the channel. I came across a French comic book that was about a Royal Canadian Air Force test pilot who also was a space traveler named Dan Cooper. Les Adventures de Dan Cooper. The comic book was published by a Belgium company around the start of the 1960s. It became very popular over in Europe as well as in French Canada and was distributed all over Quebec. A team of what we call today citizen sleuths, armchair detectives and such, known as the Cooper Research Team, picked up the comic in 2007 and by 2009 revealed to the public with the backing of FBI agent Larry Carr from Seattle, Washington, their now famous comic book theory. One of their favorite pieces of ammo to show is the cover of one of the comic book series. The cover depicts the Canadian superhero Dan Cooper jumping from a moving aircraft with a parachute. So what were they trying to show with this French-Canadian comic? I bet you're wondering. The famous D.B. Cooper that jumped out of the back of a 727 Boeing aircraft may in fact have gotten his inspiration for not only his character, but also parts of his plan on that infamous night of November 24th, 1971. From this French comic book series known as Dan Cooper, that was very popular in the Quebec area right before the time of the hijacking. They also believe that D.B. Cooper himself might be a Canadian, based on some of their findings. If you don't know the story of D.B. Cooper, let me tell you a very brief version of it, just so this all makes a little sense. But there are so many other fantastic podcasts out there that have covered this tale in great detail, like Gone, Generation Y, Astonishing Legends, Not Another True Crime, and so many more. But here's my very short version for you. It was November 24th, 1971, right before the American Thanksgiving, when a well-dressed man in a dark suit bought a one-way ticket for $20 that he paid in cash at the Portland Airport in Oregon. He told the airline personnel at the ticket purchase his name was Dan Cooper and boarded a plane heading to Seattle, Washington at 2 p.m., sitting towards the back of the plane. Shortly after takeoff, he would hand flight attendant Florence Schaefer a note that informed her he in fact had a bomb in his suitcase and that she should sit down beside him. Of course she did. And Dan Cooper showed her what appeared to be a couple of red cylinders, wires, and a battery in his briefcase. His demands were quickly noted and shockingly granted. The plane was flown to Washington where it landed, and after some negotiation, the 36 passengers on board, as well as two flight attendants, were released without harm. Dan Cooper received four parachutes as requested and $200,000 in negotiable American currency, all to be put in a knapsack. That's about $1.2 million today. He kept the captain and one flight attendant on the plane, and they took off slowly towards Mexico as instructed by Dan Cooper. Just 45 minutes into the flight, the captain and the flight attendant heard what they said was a thud noise and then realized the cabin pressure had changed. When they went to investigate, Dan Cooper and the money were gone. All that was left was his tie that he left on his seat, one very fancy sports parachute that they were shocked he did not choose to use as it was the best one out of the four, He actually chose a very old model one for himself to use, and another parachute which had been all cut up to get the cord out of it. They assumed he used this to tie the money more securely to himself as he jumped out of the back of the plane in the middle of the night, in the pouring rain, over the Lewis River area in southwest Washington, and has never been seen again. To this day, it is the only unsolved aircraft hijacking in America. So that's D.B. Cooper's tale in a Canadian acorn. Sorry, I had to. The Cooper research team, who drew the connection between the Dan Cooper comics and the D.B. Cooper mystery, used more than just a comic book cover page to plead their case. Let's talk about the name D.B. Cooper first. D.B. Cooper is the name that has stuck with this famous hijacker, as it was first published in the media reports this way in error, and has stuck with him ever since, just like the Mad Trapper of Rat River, who we just met a few episodes back. The truth is, the hijacker purchased his ticket that day under the name Dan Cooper, not D.B. Cooper, but we will call him D.B. Cooper, as that is who he is known as today. They believe the suspect D.B. Cooper to possibly be a French-Canadian who may have enjoyed the Dan Cooper comic book series that had been popular in Quebec, as almost the entire hijacking was basically torn right out of the pages of this French comic. I mentioned the famous comic book's cover showing the Royal Canadian Air Force superhero jumping out of a plane with a parachute, which does not seem out of the ordinary. But what is intriguing are the many similarities found in the story. One issue in the series had a ransom delivered in a knapsack, which matches up with the D.B. Cooper tale I just told you. Also, the name Dan Cooper was used by the hijacker as an alias. As far as anyone knows, it was not his real name, which is the same name of the comic book superhero. Another even more interesting coincidence, if you want to call it that, is the comic book issue where Dan Cooper boards an airplane in a dark suit and a mask over his eyes, sits at the back of a plane, and demands to be given a briefcase from the cockpit, then jumps out of the back of the plane in the middle of a dark, raining night over a wooden area using a military parachute. Sounds pretty familiar, right? I'd certainly say so. What they concluded in their report was that he may have worked as a chemical engineer or as some type of metal shop manager. These speculations were due to the particles of metal like titanium and others that were found and analyzed off D.B. Cooper's tie that he left behind on his seat before he jumped. They also suggested that though the comic book was popular in Quebec, they did not believe the suspect to be from Quebec, as he was not reported as having a thick French accent like one would if living in that province. They assumed he was a French-Canadian but living outside of Quebec, which explains the connection to the comic and the lack of accent. They also believed that he had a military background, as he seemed to at least think he knew how to use a parachute, even though when he chose to use it in the dead of night, over the woods, in the rain, was considered completely reckless and almost unsurvivable by most who would be considered experts in the field. A few more things they pointed out was that he asked for negotiable American funds, leading most people to believe an American would not request the funds like that, suggesting he was not American, but in fact Canadian. And the last but also pretty important point, D.B. Cooper claimed to be at the November 28, 1971 Grey Cup game in Canada when he wrote a letter to The Province, the newspaper found in British Columbia. It was just 4 days after the hijacking had occurred. The letter was published in the paper and said he did not like the composite sketch as he felt it did not look like him, that he had enjoyed the Grey Cup game, that he was now leaving Vancouver, and he thanked them for their hospitality, signing it D.B. Cooper. The letter alone leads many to believe he was in fact at the 59th annual Grey Cup game that year in Vancouver at the Empire Stadium, and that he may have been getting rid of some of that traceable money as quickly as he could. He may also have been up there hiding it, explaining why the serial numbers on the bills have never shown up on American soil. Well, at least not all of them. So who was D.B. Cooper? There is a list of suspects, but I'll tell you about a few of them. In April 1972, just 5 months later after the hijacking, Richard McCoy hijacked a plane and requested $500,000 in American cash. He was arrested and taken to jail, where he escaped. And while on the run, he was shot and killed by an officer during a gun battle. Not only were the crimes very similar, committed around the same time, the two men were also said to look very much alike. Another citizen sleuth on the case is Galen Cook, a lawyer in Alaska who has been hunting down D.B. Cooper for decades. He believes, like many, D.B. Cooper managed to hide his money in the Canadian banking system successfully, somewhere in Vancouver, Canada. He told CTV News in 2011 he had managed to narrow down his suspect field to just one. He believes William Gossett, who is a U.S. military vet from both the Korean and Vietnam Wars, where he would gain his experience with a parachute. Unfortunately, William Gossett passed away in 2003 at the age of 73. Cook has developed a relationship with William Gossett's son, Greg. The pair have spent numerous hours going over the case together. Greg Gossett claims his father was D.B. Cooper, and that his father told him this one afternoon when he took him down to the basement of their family home for a chat. He opened a lock filing cabinet and pulled out the original D.B. Cooper sketch and asked his son who it looked like. Greg, the son, replied that it looked like his father, who was standing right in front of him, William Gossett. When his father confirmed, in fact, it was. Overwhelmed and not knowing what else to say, Greg quickly asked his father what he did with the money. His father reached back in the drawer and pulled out a set of keys and stated it was safe, locked up, in a safety deposit box in Canada. Greg Gossett claimed he always knew, growing up, his father had a thing for Canada, but he never knew why until that moment. Greg also thinks back to the Christmas his family had that year after the hijacking. He would have been 4 years old at the time, and he recalls that it was the best Christmas his family had ever had. It was the first time his father had more than $20 in his pocket. And now that he looks back at the timing, it's very on point. William Gossett's other son, whose name was not mentioned in the article, claimed to have been taken to Canada on a special trip with his father in 1973, just 2 years after the hijacking. The entire trip was caught on an 8mm tape as the young son was so excited to see Canada. The son claims they got to Canada, checked into a hotel where his father left him and told him not to go anywhere, and then William Gossett would return after 2 hours. Excited they were about to head out for the day, the young son of course began recording again, only to find out they were just getting back in the car and heading home to the US. Later on, when he was older, his father told him he only took him as a cover, as he would look less suspicious having his son with him. Cook, the citizen sleuth and lawyer, tried tracking down the famous letter that was sent to The Province, the newspaper in British Columbia, and hoped that he could possibly get DNA off it. But he was told by the Vancouver police that they no longer have the letter. Cook has spent countless hours reviewing those homemade movies of the trip to Canada and believes the pair were in the area of Chinatown in Vancouver and the money may be hiding in a bank nearby. But until it can be located, there it sits quietly waiting. The keys to the safety deposit box that Greg Gossett's father once held up in front of him have been lost and at this point seem as though they will never be recovered. For now, the citizen sleuth Galen Cook continues on the case. Have you been to the Nothing Canada souvenir shop lately? It's just been restocked with great new merch designs featuring mountains, haunted trees, and more. All designs can be found on blankets, notebooks, tote bags, pillows, t-shirts, sweatshirts, and so much more. Also, we have two new additions to the shop as well, face masks, and now we have new neck scarves too, so you can just pull them up when you need them. They are super handy and convenient during these strange times we now live in. Head to the Nothing Canada souvenir shop today and grab what you need to survive this new world and help support your favorite Canadian podcast at the same time. Visit nothingcanada.com to find the link to the shop, or of course, it's always in the show notes below. So has anything ever been found, you ask? Turns out, not much. In November 1978, 7 years later, a plastic sign from a Boeing 727 describing how to lower the back exit stairs was found in the woods near where it's suspected D.B. Cooper made his jump from the back of the plane. On February 10, 1980, 9 years later, a young boy on the shores of the Columbia River in Washington found a few packs of tattered and torn money, about $5,900 worth. That money was in fact the money that was given to D.B. Cooper that fateful night. The serial numbers matched perfectly, but it certainly wasn't all the money, so where was the rest of it? We may never know. In August 2011, a DNA test was done by the FBI on Dan Cooper's tie that he had left on his seat to compare to a suspect, Lynn Doyle Cooper, who was another Korean and Vietnam War vet who was living in the Oregon area at the time, and his family members were suspicious of him and his brother. Both could not be linked to the DNA found on the tie. Today this mystery lives on as nobody knows for sure what happened that November night in 1971, except for D.B. Cooper himself. Did he make it? Do his family members know who he was? If he made it, where did he go? And most importantly, who was he? Just some of the many questions that still need to be answered. That's why year after year, D.B. Cooper's story gets told over and over again, because we all just love a really great mystery. I personally first learned about D.B. Cooper from one of my favorite movies ever, Without a Paddle. If you have not seen this movie, please go watch it for me. I hope you enjoyed this bonus adventure today and learning about D.B. Cooper's possible Canadian connection and the Canadian superhero from the French comic book that just may have inspired him. I'm Canadian Girl. Until next time, my friends. Okay, and now a super quick version of that business stuff. If you want to help support the show, please leave a review or comment on the app you're listening to, especially if you're using CastBox. I'm always on there. On your social media, please share your favorite adventure so your family and friends can join us. And please tag me. My handle is @NothingCanada on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I love to see your posts. And most importantly, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. They run the podcast charts. Your amazing and awesome reviews on there help us move around on the podcast charts so we can meet more awesome Canadian adventurers from around the world. Lastly, donations. Donations are an awesome way to show your support for the show. For as little as $1, you can help me cover one of my many hidden costs that come with running this show. I thank you all so much for your amazing support over the years. All the links to leave a review, say hi on social media, or make a donation can be found in the show notes below, or my link tree, which can be found on my Instagram and Twitter profiles.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You guys who are still here are just the absolute best people out there. I hope you're staying safe, staying sane, and most importantly, staying in touch with those you love. Stay safe, my friends. I'm Canadian Girl.